The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and its honorable court.
Good morning, everyone. The first argued case this morning is number 21-1443, Hytera Communications Corporation against Motorola Solutions. Mr. Ryland.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. The district court in this case found no infringement and dismissed the entire case in a curt opinion that was inconsistent with this court's precedent, the federal and local rules, and even inconsistent with the party's arguments.
Mr. Ryland, this is Judge Wallach.
Yes, Judge Wallach.
On page 26 of the red brief, Motorola says, I'm quoting them, the record is clear that Hytera voluntarily withdrew both, and I'm adding this in, the energy normalization theory and the linear scaling theory, after its expert introduced them for the first time in his infringement report, and Motorola moved to strike them. Then on page 57 of the red brief, Motorola says, with respect to the energy normalization theory, Hytera remarkably contends Motorola never moved to strike that theory, and Hytera never withdrew it. The record shows that Motorola objected your expert's reliance on energy normalization, and that you later deleted the paragraph which referred to energy normalization from your expert's amended report. Why should we consider these theories on appeal if you've withdrawn them, and did you not withdraw them?
Two reasons, Your Honor. First, we did not withdraw the entire theory. We struck a portion of the expert report in response to a threatened motion to strike to move forward towards summary judgment. So because we removed that piece of evidence, we didn't remove the entire theory. The second is that Motorola's expert...
Wait. Did you strike the reference to energy normalization?
In the expert report? Yes, Your Honor.
Then what's your second reason?
The second reason is that both in the expert report and in deposition testimony of both experts, but particularly Motorola's expert, referred to this same energy normalization in support of an invalidity theory. And he relied on code that he considered to be, or he said was identical or nearly identical to the code that we were relying on for infringement, and explained what the function of energy normalization was. So relying on that piece of testimony and that evidence, from Motorola's expert, we still believe the theory to be in the case because it confirmed that energy normalization provided the necessary gain for the treble boost.
Okay, let me ask you about one other thing, and that is the two screenshots purporting to show a treble boost during a test you performed. Motorola contends that you claim privilege and refuse to produce those two screenshots. Did you provide any other basis than privilege in refusing to produce them? And if you did refuse to produce them, how can you rely on them now?
I'm not sure that we refused to produce them. I know that there was some dispute about it, but it died out during the case. We produced the screenshots for sure, and I'm not sure which portion was refused to be produced. I'm confused on the question, Your Honor.
Okay, then I'll let Motorola elucidate.
That's fine. We produced the screenshots. There was, those screenshots were then provided to the expert, I believe, but the expert opined on it and they were able to inquire as to them with the expert. I'm not sure what we prevented Motorola from having that they said they needed for summary judgment, nor did the issue persist into discovery in the case with lots of discovery disputes. So if there was a refusal produce it, I don't know that issue actually came to a head prior to summary judgment.
Okay, well, I'll let counsel clarify that, and then you'll be able to respond. I don't want to eat any more of your time.
Certainly. What I want to talk about is the inconsistencies in the case, and you know, along the way here, the judge refused to construe disputed claim terms, but then gave them elaborate meanings to find non-infringement. The district court labeled disputed facts as, quote-unquote, agreed, to be able to satisfy Rule 20 or Rule 56, and Motorola proffered and ultimately prevailed on an argument to this day it claims was timely, But in an opinion following Hytera's opening appeal brief here, the district court confirmed that the base boost argument that was a basis for summary judgment wasn't raised until summary judgment. And that's a problem because that's 2 years, nearly 2 years after the time it was supposed to be disclosed in the contentions. We think the entire opinion should be overturned, but today I want to focus on two key inconsistencies, and there are two pure legal errors that these standing alone warrant remanding the case. First is the district court's reading of or the base boost issue, and the court construed or to require in a method claim a device with two thresholds and capable of performing two alternative steps, base boost and treble boost. And after summary judgment, it clarified even further and actually in more confusing fashion that it rejected the court's or this court's or precedent that was cited by Hytera in favor of reading or to mean if then rather than either or. And that's actually directly in the fees opinion of this case on JA10537 in the footnote. The second legal issue and legal error is the district court's wholesale failure to consider the doctrine of equivalence.
Counsel,
it didn't address
them. Yes, sir. This is Judge Wallach again. I want to ask you about your argument you just made. The word or in step 103 is a conditional statement that specifies both what to do if the ambient noise is too loud and what to do if the ambient noise is too quiet. Let me quote. Performing a treble boost processing if it is determined that the energy value of the current ambient noise is greater than a first threshold, or performing a bass boost processing it if it is determined that the energy value of the current ambient noise is smaller than a second threshold. According to independent claim one, an infringing device must perform a treble boost or a bass boost, but not both, each time the method is performed. So it's not enough for the audio output device to only perform a treble boost in a noisy environment. How do you respond?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that what's separated on either, I don't believe that or is a conditional statement because the conditional is if this, perform this, and then or. So that would separate two steps, alternative steps, with each having a conditional statement. Second, I don't read the patent that narrowly. There is no reason to read the patent as requiring both when the or was used. In fact, that's what this court has said routinely is what or means, is it's designating alternatives. And in this instance, the invention is aimed at a volume adjustment coupled with a frequency adjustment. Now, if a bass boost is, if the steps are performed and one use occurs, and that's all that's necessary for infringement of this method claim, is one use. If it follows those steps and performs one of the two designated alternatives, that's consistent with this court's reading of OR. To require both determinations is contrary to what the claim says. The claim could have been written that way, and it's not. The patentee chose to designate the two alternative steps using the word OR.
But the district court said that it had to have the capability of responding to either the treble or the bass, and that was the foundation for the decision of non-infringement. Is that a fair statement of what was decided?
I don't believe that the district court was correct in that for several reasons, the first of which is that there is, you know, that same exact argument was raised before this court in Schumer, where there was an or statement that was, the defendant argued, required a capability of performing the alternative steps, and this court rejected that.
Well, but you look at the usage of or, the alternative, based on the teachings of the specification, not other than that, I agree that in the claim it could be deemed ambiguous, but we have the specification which says that it will respond to either the treble or the bass depending on what the ambient circumstances constitute. Is that correct?
I agree, Your Honor, that it responds to either or, and that's the focus is the word or here, and it's either or, and it performs either or, but the claim interpretation based on the specification doesn't require that the claim be read so narrowly that both occur. In fact, if you look at figure 2 in the patent, the last step is not treble boost or bass boost. It's a frequency adjustment. And the patent at column 1, 43 through 47, talks about what the purpose of the invention is. And it's really the essence of this invention is performing an adaptive volume adjustment in conjunction with the frequency adjustment. If the patentee wanted both to be performed, it would have claimed it that way. Claim 1, though, designated alternative steps following what this court's precedent is for OR, and one of those two is performed by Motorola, thereby confirming infringement of that step. Also, in the footnote, the court said that the OR, and excuse me, in the fees footnote that I referenced before, the court read OR as if-then, which if you inject that into the claim doesn't even make sense, that you would perform a treble step or treble boost at a certain frequency, if-then perform a bass boost at a second frequency or a second threshold. So where I'm confused is that there's pretty straightforward law for OR from this court. The court then said there's absolutely no need for a construction, and then went on to construe the claim as requiring two thresholds, requiring the capability to do both boosts, requiring a determination of the thresholds in both instances, when the claim and the specification support that what is really required is a volume adjustment and a frequency adjustment. Which one it does, it doesn't matter because of the OR. And Motorola performs that treble boost, and that's confirmed in the record.
But it doesn't have the capability of the bass boost.
Correct, and there's nothing that says that it's required to have the capability of the bass boost in the claim. It's two conditional steps separated by an OR. And that's where I feel like we've gotten off base a little bit. And this actually highlights what Motorola did below. Below, they said that it's a device capable of both boosts and said no construction was necessary. On appeal, they changed their tune completely and said the court construction is right. Well, first of all, the court never even gave Hytera an opportunity for claim construction. And second, it now argues that these conditional statements must be read and performed together. And if you look at our brief, that actually rewrites the claim. That moves both conditional statements up and requires them to be performed, and then a determination of which boost is performed. In fact, Motorola...
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
Counsel, this is Judge Rayner. If we affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment based on the base boost requirement, there's no need to remand, right? I mean, you'd lose on that point.
Yes, Your Honor, we do.
Okay, all right.
I just want to close by saying, you know, the oddities in this case are simply, this case persisted for 3 years. A base boost argument came up at summary judgment. In fact, the first time we saw it was a rebuttal expert report with no ability to address it with our expert or for claim construction. Dismissed the case outright on an argument, an issue that we never raised, and it was clear we never raised. This kind of discrepancy is sort of what leaves us baffled, and that the court really went out of its way to find different ways to interpret OR than what this court has said in the past.
All right. Let's hear from the other side, and we'll save you rebuttal time. Okay, Mr. Wilcox.
Thank you, Judge Newman, and may it please the court. Jason Wilcox on behalf of Motorola Solutions.
This is Judge Wallach. Would you address that question of the two screenshots?
Yes, Judge Wallach. So they did include the screenshots in their infringement contentions, as you can see, you know, on Appendix 6953 to 6954. What they didn't produce at any point was the underlying text behind those screenshots, and their expert never relied on those screenshots in his report. If you look at Appendix 5062 to 5068, where their expert lays out his opinion on the treble boost limitation, he never mentions the screenshots. As far as I know, their testifying expert was never provided the screenshots. Those screenshots were created by tests performed by a consulting expert, And as we argued at Appendix 9777, when we asked for that information, they refused to provide it, saying it was only given to a consulting expert, so under Rule 26, they didn't have to disclose it. And that's fine, that's their choice, but then once they make that choice, they then can't rely on it to defeat summary judgment. And at this point, where none of the witnesses in the case have seen it and their expert didn't rely on it, they don't have an avenue to get it into evidence. And when they don't have an avenue to get it into evidence, it can't create a material dispute of fact. So I think that that's why the screenshots aren't relevant and don't create an issue that would prevent summary judgment here on the treble boost limitation. But I also, Judge Wallach, want to address the base boost limitation, since that's where my friend on the other side spent most of his time. And I think that you are exactly right, Judge Wallach and Judge Newman, that is a conditional limitation. The final step of the method is a conditional limitation. It presents two conditional choices tied to two different thresholds, requires determining whether either of those two thresholds is met, and if so, requires performing the corresponding frequency boost. Treble boost if the first threshold is met because it's a loud environment, and a bass boost if the second threshold is met because it's a quiet environment. And as you picked up on, Judge Newman, that's confirmed by the specification. If you look at the specification at columns 4, lines 5 to 9, and column 11, lines 28 to 38, it talks about the purpose of the invention, which is continuously adjusting the frequency response as you move between quiet and loud environments. That requires being able to perform both types of boosts. And under Hytera theory, the user would have to manually adjust the boost in quiet environments, which is exactly what the invention is trying to avoid, saying it gets in the way of people doing their work. But beyond the purpose of the invention at those lines in the specification, you also have several examples in the specification where it uses conditional language to talk about these claim steps. So you have the abstract where it talks about how you need to perform the treble boost while judging that the ambient noise is bigger than a first threshold, and a bass boost while judging that the ambient noise is bigger than is below a second threshold. That's not laying out alternatives. That's saying you need to perform the relevant boost while the necessary condition is satisfied. The specification says the same thing at column 5, lines 19 to 26, and column 10, lines 62 to 66, and column 11, lines 4 to 7. And as you said, Judge Newman, you also have column 3, lines 66, to column 4, line 3, where it talks about the frequency response may be adjusted through the treble boost or the bass boost based on the energy value of the current ambient noise. You take the current ambient noise into account, and then you perform the necessary boost. And that's not only repeated throughout the specification, it's also the position the examiner took in Appendix 5043 when initially allowing the claim, and the position Hytera took itself in IPR proceedings at Appendix 5258, 5261, and 5281-82, where it talked about a first and second threshold and said that, and there would have been no reason to talk about a first and second threshold if you only needed one or the other, but you need both. So I think that that's evidence from the language of the claim, Your Honor. We believe that that's only one of the bases, though, this court has to affirm on. It can also affirm based on either of the other two grounds for the district court's summary judgment decision. And I'm happy to answer any questions the court has about those other grounds, but I didn't hear my friend on the other side address them, just as I didn't hear my friend on the other side address the doctrine of equivalence issue that you wanted to raise, and which, as Judge Reyna pointed out, the court doesn't need to reach if it affirms on base boost. So if there are no other questions from the court, I will yield back the balance of my time.
Well, just to be clear, their argument is that if you only need a treble boost, it doesn't matter if you have the capability for the bass boost or not, you still would have infringement because the capability is stated in the alternative.
I don't agree, Judge Newman, that it's stated in the alternative. There is an or there. What's the function that the or is serving is to signal that you can only perform one of them. So you'll either perform a base boost or you will perform a treble boost. You'll never perform both because that would be inconsistent with the purpose of the invention. But you still have to be capable of evaluating and determining whether the first threshold and the second threshold are satisfied and taking the appropriate conditional action if it is. And I think that's consistent with this court's previous decision between these same parties in the Hytera case from last year, where the court looked at language that was an if one thing do a selecting step, otherwise do another. And I disagree that that leads to any strange result here. My friend on the other side talked about if-then formulation. I think that what all it says is if the first threshold is satisfied, you perform a treble boost. Or if the second threshold is satisfied, you perform a base boost. That's a very common type of conditional statement. It isn't laying out two types of alternatives, and it isn't using the type of alternative language that this court has used, or just claims to have used in the past, where this court has said that the limitation is just a list of alternatives. It doesn't say at least one of, or one or more of the following. It lays out two conditions and specifies the actions to take if those conditions are satisfied. You have to determine if those conditions are satisfied and take the appropriate action to perform the claim. The final thing I will say, Judge Newman, is my friend on the other side suggested that the district court acknowledged this was sprung on the other side at the last minute. If you look at what the district court actually said in its fee opinion, at Appendix 10-537, well, what it said was Motorola didn't file a motion to dismiss based on this argument and waited to summary judgment. It wasn't saying that Motorola sat on its hands to raise this argument until summary judgment. As you heard from my friends on the other side, we mentioned it in our expert report, which you can see at Appendix 6370-6374. So this issue was teed up. Hytera knew it was in dispute, had the full opportunity to brief it as part of the summary judgment briefing, and the district court looked at the arguments that the parties made, looked at the intrinsic evidence, and decided based on that intrinsic evidence that the claims require the capability of performing the base boost limitation.
Okay. Any more questions for Mr. Wilcox?
Not for me.
All right. Mr. Ryland, you have your rebuttal time.
I want to hit a couple of points very quickly. First, my friend on the other side said that the court didn't say that this issue wasn't addressed until summary judgment, but on Appendix 1053A, the court said neither party directly addressed the issue until the summary judgment stage, and once raised, Motorola prevailed on the issue. I wanted to also quickly touch on the doctrine of equivalence, because base boost and doctrine of equivalence rise and fall with each other, and Motorola's brief essentially concedes that. Its only substantive argument for doctrine of equivalence is that base boost precludes it. If the court sides with Hytera on base boost, then the only argument that remains is waiver, and Hytera has maintained consistently its doctrine of equivalence argument from the complaint, amended complaints, infringement contentions, expert report, and reserved it in its partial motion for summary judgment. So that's clearly not a waiver in the cases that were cited.
Counsel, this is Judge Rain. I may have missed it, but did you address doctrine of equivalent in your initial argument this morning?
I tried to.
I tried to, but didn't get to it. But what are you saying that the base and treble boosts are equivalent?
And therefore
it doesn't matter how the claim is construed?
No, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that if the base and or issue is resolved in Hytera's favor, the remaining issues don't preclude the court from considering the doctrine of equivalence. In fact, the court didn't consider it at all, and the only rebuttal that Motorola has on waiver is simply that, you know, that base boost would prevent it. If base boost issue is overturned, then the doctrine of equivalence is in play, and the case, at a minimum, must be remanded for the doctrine of equivalence. Lastly, I wanted to touch on the charts or the figures that were provided and then claimed, or as counsel claims, were covered by privilege. Motorola was informed.
Please continue.
Motorola was informed that we had a consulting expert perform those tests. It was called MD Acoustics, and we informed them of that in discovery. We made them available, and they could be deposed. Motorola chose not to depose them. And that was the end of the issue. Moreover, that was not, as my friend said, needed to create a material dispute of fact. There was lots of evidence, mostly, in fact, most importantly, the code. Motorola's own code confirmed all of the things that were shown in those charts. So to say that the material issue of fact, you know, rises and falls with those charts is simply not the case and not what was argued below.
Okay. Any more questions for Mr. Ryland?
Not for me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under submission.